Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like month-long offers of low commission. At BetDaq, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDaq is changing for the better. For the better, like you. BetDaq, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. Sunderland won 4-0 yesterday against Newcastle, kind of, under-21s, I'd say. And I'm joined by Sky Sports' Tom White to talk about that, his life, his career, and, well, just shoot the breeze and see what happens. So how are you, Tom?
I'm very well, thank you. I was not so good at half-time yesterday. I thought we might be in for a bit of an embarrassment. But by the end, I was content, I would say.
Yeah, it was the only way, really, it felt... I suppose it felt good to win it 4-0. That was the best result. Just beat them comfortably, and that was that. It was nice. I enjoyed the second half.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I mean, it's not... No one would ever say it's a proper derby. You don't come away with that euphoric feeling of beating Newcastle, which you... If you beat Newcastle, that's how you feel. It wasn't like that, obviously, because it was their under-21s, but it could have been a really bad... It was never going to be a brilliant night, but it could have been a really bad night. So, content.
What do you think about the Newcastle fans as well? There's 3,000 of them there.
Well, the thing was, the noise they made was very good. They deserve the credit for that. But I didn't hear one chant that was positive towards their own team. It tended to all be chants negative towards Sunderland, which I didn't like very much because those... Their youngsters would have loved it if they'd completely got behind them.
Yeah,
they would have loved the noise and everything, the volume of it, but I thought they maybe could have got behind their team more rather than just aiming negative chants at Sunderland.
Yeah, it did feel like they were there just to take the pee.
Yeah, I think they were, but at the same time, at least they did turn up and they made their noise. They shouldn't have been trying to rip out seats, but I'd imagine there wasn't many of them doing that. I don't think you can... tar them all with that brush, but it made noise, so fair enough.
The lineup for Sunderland was Robin Wright, Rhys James, Ali Mozturk, Tom Flanagan, Luke O'Nine, midfield, Mumba McGeoch, and then Maguire, Watmore, Sinclair, and Wyke made up a front four. It's hard to pinpoint positions on them because they're very fluid. As you say, 0-0 half time, but Sunderland took the lead just after with an own goal through Watts. Is what I have written down, whoever Watts is. Charlie Wyke scored a header for 2-0. Maguire scored a really good goal for 3. And then Kimpy Oka, who I thought looked very good, sealed it for 4. But before we start, should this game have ever happened?
Well, the Checker Trade Trophy, or whatever it's been called in the past and such like, I don't really think that we need under-23 teams, under-21 teams in it. I think it should just be for the old version. This was to give it to give the youngsters of other clubs a chance to play competitive games. But the best way for those youngsters to play competitive games would be to go out on loan rather than the odd game in the Checker Trade Trophy. So I'm not a big fan of it, to be honest. In that sense, I don't think that it should have gone ahead. And if we can keep progressing, I would hope that we play teams from League One and League Two and don't play any further teams in the under-21s because... If, for instance, Manchester City under-21s win it, I think it'll be a bit of a shame because this is sort of League One and League Two's fans' chance of a day out at Wembley, which we all love and don't really get much of an opportunity, even us having played so long in the Premier League. we don't get an opportunity to go to Wembley very often. So I think this should be left to us.
But do you think the competition as a whole, do you think they did make a mistake when they put the under 21 sides in? Because even, I suppose the League One and League Two teams voted on it as well. They the owners think it's all right. Hmm. But the fans just aren't buying into it. The attendances are low. I mean, Sunderland v Newcastle, it's probably the highest one attendance they've probably had in the competition, 14,000 there yesterday. But do you think it's working?
Well, no, I don't think it is working. I think the idea behind it was fair enough, but I don't think it's worked. The attendances are very bad. But at the same time, on the other side, I wouldn't have flown all the way up from the south of England if we were at home to Bury last night.
Mm.
Whereas I did fly up because it was against a version of Newcastle. So in that sense, I suppose you could say it's working. But if it was against Arsenal's under-21s or Liverpool's under-21s, then, well, it couldn't be Arsenal's, I suppose, because of the split. But if it was against Liverpool's under-21s, I wouldn't have bothered flying back either. It's only really because it's sort of a derby and it's been a while since we've been able to have one. So I suppose I'm contradicting myself a little bit, but I still think it should be. I mean, I didn't, when our under-23s were in it, I wasn't bothered about it.
No,
so I can't see how they can be either. I would stick to the old-fashioned way.
It was interesting as well. Newcastle played, I think, Macclesfield at home, and there was like 1,400 there, and then last night there's double that at the same light. So
yeah, I think same. Well, they could. We know that they could have sold more. Now, some people might have only wanted to buy a ticket to cause trouble, but in general, it's for the same reason. It's because there hasn't been a derby for so long. This was something, and actually, had they won, they would have had they would have really, really enjoyed it. Understandably, just like if it was the other way around. So I suppose I could see the interest from their side as well for two reasons.
I suppose now we've got a chance at Wembley. We're not far away from potentially being there. So do you think at this point we should take it very seriously, the competition?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I want the day at Wembley. We're out of the FA Cup. We're out of the League Cup. So absolutely 100%. And I think that whoever we played in the final, we would get the majority of the stadium. And everyone that I speak to say that they'd go. I haven't spoken to a single Sunderland fan who said if we got to Wembley, they wouldn't go. So it would just be a day out. And hopefully we could even win at Wembley and lift a trophy, hopefully a trophy that we'll never be in again.
Well, we will next year with our under 20.
Well, yeah, but our first team at least.
I don't mean we've got a chance of defending it. How many fans do you think we would take? I was talking about this last night to my friends, and we were saying, could it be 40? I mean, Coventry took 40,000 last year. Could it be 50, 60,000 if we were given it?
Well, I was talking about it. I went to Charlton away at the weekend, and we were saying we think that we can get 60 because it holds 90. You've got to probably take out 10 or 15 for corporate. And I know it depends on who we play, but I was looking through the teams it could be. I can't see them taking...
Only Portsmouth.
Yeah.
The ones who could take 30-ish.
Well, Portsmouth could, but I think that we could sell 60 tickets, and I think there's a good chance we could be given 60,000 tickets. So I would hope that many.
It'd be great. That.
Which is quite incredible.
Yeah, taking London over. But,
yeah.
We did that with the League Cup final. So
yes,
God
I know.
Knows when we've got twice as many.
Tell you what, that was a fun... I didn't even mind losing. The atmosphere was amazing. All the Sunderland fans, we all stayed to clap Manchester City winning the trophy. They wouldn't have got that. The Manchester City fans decided they loved us because of the whole atmosphere and everything about it. And the fact is, we even took the lead. So we even had that moment of joy, even if we did end up losing. So I want to go back.
Yeah, definitely. Hopefully not a playoff final.
Well, that's it. I don't want to go there twice.
Yeah,
get in the top two.
The game itself, which player stood out for you?
When Kimpioka came on, he made a big difference.
Direct, isn't he?
Yeah, I really like him. He's still very raw, but he's bound to be. He stood out. So, but I had my eye on him. I also had my eye on Mumba because we haven't seen that much of him. I thought he was quite impressive, but again, he's still quite raw as well. In a different way to Kimpioka. Kimpioka's raw in the terms of he just gets the ball and just goes with it. Mumba is a lot more refined player, but also he needs to, because he's very young, his footballing brain isn't there yet. But I know a lot of people disagree with me here, but you see, I love the fact that when Dylan McGeoch gets the ball sticks to his feet, and it's rare that he gives it away. He's not got 100% pass completion, yeah. But I love the fact that he's very calm on the ball. When he gets it, you know he's going to get his head up, give it to someone else. Even if it is sideways, we're going to keep possession. I like McGeoch, but last night, the player who I thought was the best was Flanagan, which really, given that he's played most of the season, he should be. But I thought he was very good last night.
I'm surprised he played.
Well,
because he's been injured as well. I was surprised to see him in there. But I don't know if Baldwin, because he wasn't even on the bench.
Baldwin's played almost every game, so he definitely needed the rest. Ozturk, fair enough.
Leuven is injured,
and I'm not sure if he'll feature much. If this centre back comes in, I'm not sure how much Leuven's will play again. So I think it kind of had to be Flanagan, unless you were going to put a youngster in there. But the best thing to do was make the defence. If you look at our back four and goalkeeper, they were all first team players. Wasn't far off first choice. I mean, Luke O'Neill could well be first choice right back now. Yeah. Rhys James seems to be picked ahead of Oviedo. Flanagan's definitely first-choice centre-back with Baldwin, so putting Ozturk in for Baldwin. And Reuter is a senior goalkeeper.
He's very good this year.
Yeah, he's looked good when he's played. So that was the thing to do. Get the solid defence. Don't let them get too many chances and hope that we get chances at the other end. And actually, it worked. So I wasn't surprised to see Flanagan in, and I think he stood out, but he should have stood out.
And Sinclair, to me, it looks like he's wearing shoes on ice. Like, he's just slipping and sliding all over the place. Like, the amount of times he almost looks like he's going to get in, he just falls over. It's frustrating.
It is frustrating. It's probably more frustrating for him because you can tell that he is trying so hard. And he plays in the Premier League. He's a Premier League player, officially. And he scored one goal for us, albeit a very important goal for us. And the thing is, when he plays, whether it's up front or on the wing, he never seems to look like scoring. Now, he hit the post last night, didn't he? But when we scored from the, we went out for a corner and we scored from the corner. But you can tell that he is trying so hard, and it's really worrying him that he's not scoring, but he's not really looking like scoring. I think if he could get one, then he might go on a little run. But if we're now looking for a striker, I wonder if he might be sent back.
Yeah, I worry for him.
It would be a shame, because when he came on against Charlton,
he looked brilliant.
I thought, this is it. This could be our best signing. First game of the season. I thought, this could be the signing of the summer. And he hasn't really shown it since. But he got injured straight away.
Mm-hmm. He did look good that opening day. He looked direct. But now I worry that he's not even found his level. Mm. Like, could he just be a League One, League Two player, and a player who had such hype?
Yeah,
it would be a shame if he doesn't make that step.
And I don't see how he's going to get into the team now, because, I mean, as long as Madger is still here, Madger's first choice. Charlie Wyke is back. He's got a goal last night, and he should be our first choice.
He looked very good yesterday,
He's, and we needed a big, strong striker against their youngsters. So he did it. He did his job. Mm-hmm. You've got Watmore will be ahead of Sinclair as well. And if we're signing a new striker, there's another one. And sometimes we put Maguire there. So straight away, Sinclair's so far down on the list. And then if you think that he's, Kimpioka is also a striker stroke winger, Kimpioka has looked better. So I do wonder if we might terminate that loan, which would be a shame because he's got a lot of potential. When he was at Liverpool, he was very, very highly rated. But he left Liverpool because he wasn't playing. He went to Watford, still hasn't been playing. He's come on loan to League One and he's barely playing. So it's quite a shame. It's not too late for him.
Yeah.
But it might be too late for him this season.
Yeah, I do worry about for him, like where his career's going. But I think Watford would make sense for them to bring him back anyway, because they'll look at the situation and go, well, he's probably only going to play two or three more games this year.
Yeah.
So they're likely to cancel it if we don't.
They might cancel it and send him to someone else.
Yeah, which would make sense. Yeah. I mean, I think he can do a job in League One. I think if the team was almost built around him and his strengths, I think he could do well.
Yeah.
I mean, when he was playing for us, he brought other players into the game, which I used to like. But at the minute, just with Wyke back, I just can't see a way that he's going to
And what more? I think it's a shame, but I wouldn't be surprised to see it being terminated.
What more? just mentioned him there. He struggled last night and obviously went off with an injury as well. What do you make of him? Do you think he's maybe hit the wall where we saw it with Fraser Campbell? He came back from his injury, did really well initially, and then it took him a while. Like, the adrenaline almost wore off and he struggled. Do you think Watmore maybe needs a few games rest?
I actually think he needs more minutes than anything, even if it's playing for our under-23s. I think he needs more minutes because he's playing and he's trying, and he hasn't lost his pace, which surprised me, because Fraser Campbell did lose his pace, which is understandable. Mm-hmm. Watmore still got his pace, but he's just running into the defenders. Whereas last time, that brief period where he came back, he was getting past the defenders and they were having to foul him. Now he's running into the defenders, but I think that's still rustiness. I don't think it's anything to do with his injury, because he seems physically to be as quick as he was. Mm-hmm. He just needs more time on the pitch, even if it isn't in the first team. I think he needs more minutes rather than less.
Yeah, I think you're right in some senses, but I do think when a player has two serious injuries like that, you can't necessarily give them as many minutes as maybe you'd want, because you don't want to have a recurrence. Last year, we played him too much.
Hmm.
He did the injury pretty much straight. It was like 5 games back.
Yeah.
So I think maybe just this weekend against Luton, have him on the bench just in case, and then we've got away game after that, and then we've got a week off against Gillingham. So maybe once the window ends and he's not had any niggles or anything, I mean, I know he's picked one up yesterday, maybe we'll be more ready going into the late part of the season, February onwards.
Yeah, well, hopefully, because I absolutely love him.
Mm-hmm.
And he, when he got injured the first time in the Premier League, he was worth a lot of money. And there was every chance, and I know this, there was every chance that he was going to go in January, but for big money. Like, I wouldn't have wanted to see him go, but I know the money it was going to be to another Premier League club, and it would have been, wow, all right, well, we'll have that. We'll take that. And then he got the injury, comes back, does it again. He's been incredibly unlucky, because he was really starting to look good, strangely enough, under David Moyes.
Yeah, it was him and Ichibi and Defoe together as a front three.
I know. It was working. And under Allardyce, when it was him, Defoe, and
Barini.
And there was either Barini or Kasri. Yeah. I suppose Watmore, Kasri and Barini, it was always 2 from 3 there with Defoe up front. That was looking good as well. When he came on in that huge game against Norwich that we won 3-0 and Watmore scored, he was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
And he was really looking like a Premier League player. So it's one of those really sad stories in football, but doesn't have to have a sad ending. And I really hope it has a happy ending.
And I suppose last thing really on the game yesterday, I thought we looked very strong in the air, which for us isn't usual. But do you think that was more because we were playing against an under-21 side rather than us, you know, changing our style, because our corners looked a bit more dangerous? But is that because they weren't winning the first headers that a League One team would?
Well, yeah, that's definitely got part of it, that we should be more physical, because it was literally men against boys. And I said to I went down with my dad to the game, and I also two mates who actually were Newcastle fans, you know, they would never cause any trouble or anything like that. And I said to them all, I said, our set pieces aren't our forte, but tonight it should be our forte. And especially with Charlie Wyke back, that should be where we're dangerous. In the first half, we did nothing from our set pieces, and I looked like a bit of an idiot. And second half, we ended up scoring 2, albeit one of them was an own goal. Suddenly, we were causing problems, which we should have done. And I think that is to do with the fact that they are, in these academies, they play out from the back, they keep the ball on the ground, and they very rarely go long. And if they do, it's a pass in the corner for someone to run onto, as opposed to someone to have a physical battle against a big centre back. So I think that's the main reason. But also, Ozturk is a big lump who should be winning every header as well as Flanagan being an experienced tall centre back too, and then having Charlie Wyke back. So a few factors, but mainly I think it was because it was literally men against boys.
Do you think now going forward in the league, if Wyke is playing, our defensive set pieces are going to improve? Because it's like having a third centre back, isn't it? Yeah, when you have a tall striker who comes back on the corners, mm-hmm. they essentially act as an additional, you know, I suppose, marker in the box. But do you think we'll improve now that Wyke's going to likely be starting more games and defensively he's always going to be back? Do you think that'll make a big difference?
Yes, I think it will make a difference. I think when we briefly went with a proper three at the back, when we very briefly had three proper centre backs there, that was the idea, because you got an extra big man in there rather than a small fullback. You got an extra big man. And now if you've got, it's the same thing really. We've got a big man who can win the ball in Charlie Wyke. So it should help. I don't think it's going to be our salvation, but it will help. It's an extra big man in there for the corners. So.
Okay, well, we'll move on to Sunderland in general. I suppose the best place to start is the Netflix series, which I'm sure you've watched. What
yes.
were your views of that?
Absolutely loved it. And everyone who's watched it, who isn't a Sunderland fan, have said to me how much they loved it as well. I thought it was brilliantly done, because I loved Premier Passions back in, the 96-97 season. That was absolutely incredible.
That's still great TV now.
It is, because you can still watch it on YouTube.
And they're in the dressing room as well.
Yeah,
which is...
exactly. Well, Jody Craddock takes his wife fronts off and flings them on the camera at one point. that's how close they were to the action. But loved the documentary, loved the people in it, and I'm looking forward to the second one.
Do you think it represented Sunderland well?
I think
it did. Well?
I think it represented the fans very well. And it really let people understand the history of why everybody is so passionate about the club. And Sunderland fans have always had a good reputation for being loyal fans. I think that's upped it a little bit. And some of the things, so although they didn't have, it wasn't access all areas, they did get some great stuff. I mean, when Martin Bain is there having just welcomed Ashley Fletcher on deadline day at the end of January, all smiles that Ashley Fletcher has signed, and then gets the phone call that Jack Rodwell has refused to tear up his contract, and he starts swearing and slams the door, and you just see Ashley Fletcher's face.
Yeah.
You think, crikey. I mean, we would never have known that reaction. And then what? And the fan that confronts Coleman, I met Chris Coleman a few times, because obviously I'm good friends with his wife, because we did the same job. And in fact, was speaking to his wife yesterday, great lady, by the way, Charlotte, absolutely brilliant. But when Coleman gets confronted by that fan and he says, are you calling me that? Are you calling me that? Well, I'm a married man with six kids. I'm not sure if that's relevant. But I loved the documentary. I'm trying to get everyone into it, and they're watching it and loving it.
Yeah. Do you think it's something that we'll see more of? I know Man City and Juventus have done them, but theirs were more, I don't want to say propaganda, but it felt like everything was hunky-dory, which I suppose it is at Man City. But
yeah, well, it could have been that for us.
Yeah.
If we'd gone up and all the signings had been brilliant and Grayson had lasted the whole season, was a hero back in the Premier League, it would have been the same for us. Maybe it makes it better viewing than it wasn't. But I've said to everyone, you don't have to be a Sunderland fan to watch it. Everyone's realising that, because people are watching it all over the world. Because that deadline day, they came into Sky, the Fullwell 73, and they interviewed a few of us, and they interviewed me as well. But I was cut out of it, and probably fair enough. One, because I'm quite boring, but two, we were close to signing Ovi Ejaria. And I was asked about the signings that were coming in. So Lee Camp, Ovi Ejaria, Ashley Fletcher. And I knew all about Ovi Ejaria. I knew he was a central midfielder for Liverpool. I knew what he looked like. I knew what type of player he was. I knew how highly rated he was. And so I was given chapter and verse on Ovi Ejaria. Problem was, I thought his name was Ovi Ejaria.
Oh.
So the whole way through, I'm talking about, it's Ejaria, he's young, but he could be a good player. So even though I knew everything about him, I got his name wrong. So
that's not an idea.
So I was understandably cut, whereas my colleague Jim White did manage to make the final cut.
Yeah.
Natalie Sawyer was cut as well, by the way. So
Jim White does like Sunderland, doesn't he? He's always got us on his TalkSport show.
Where
I think it's because Stuart Donald always drops nuggets.
Yeah. Yeah, he does like Sunderland. He always has liked Sunderland.
Rangers fan, isn't he?
He'd be Rangers over Celtic, but if you ask him who he supports, he'll say no one. He's not, he's not bothered and hasn't been for a long time. I know a lot of people in the Celtic Rangers rivalry who've supported one team or the other, and actually their love for the for their club has faded because the rivalry has gone too far.
A lot of journalists are like that though, aren't they?
Yeah.
As well,
well, these, I mean, these aren't even journalists I'm talking about. A lot of fans who have just kind of gone, well, I do prefer one to the other, but I can't say I support them anymore. I'm not going to go anymore because it, they feel that it's gone a bit far. But that's only a few people. But Jim, he'd say Rangers over Celtic, but I wouldn't say he's a Celtic fan. He likes Sunderland, but also he's he has Mickey Gray on his show once a week as well. And Mickey's a great man. He gets on great with Mickey. He actually, Jim knew Ellis Short as well. And now he knows Stuart Donald. So he's got good contact at the club.
How do you feel about this season in general? Just the playing side. How do you feel about the way Jack Ross has the team playing and you know, third in the league, big game against Luton, obviously, this weekend, who are, I think have lost their manager today, actually. Mm. But what do you make about the season in general? Is it is what you expected?
Well, one, I'm absolutely loving it. I'm really enjoying this season. I've gone to more games than usual. Because
how many have you been to?
I've been to...
You go away games mainly, don't you?
Yes. Well, last night was my first home game of the season. I went to Gillingham, Wimbledon, Coventry, Bradford, Portsmouth, Charlton, now Newcastle. So there's seven. I'll go to Oxford, Wickham, Blackpool at home. And as soon as we get to a time where if we win, we get promoted, I'll go to that. I'll find a way. I'll just, I mean, I would never pull a sickie, but I will beg someone to be there. And if it's playoffs, I will be at hopefully three games or at least two. So I do get to plenty. Mm-hmm. But I've loved this season. The way we play is, although the formation on paper is different, it's very similar to Gus Poyet. It's keep possession and be patient for your chances. Now, the difference is under Poyet, some games we were not even getting a single chance, because that style of football, when you're trying to survive, it's really like we want to get one chance, take it, and win 1-0. Now, we're getting more chances because we're going for promotion rather than trying to survive relegation. So it's working nicely as long as we take the chances, which with Madger, thankfully, we have been. Madger, Maguire, Gooch has got a few. And I like it. I didn't like it so much under Poyet, but I'm enjoying it this season.
Do you think Jack Ross is a long-term Sunderland boss? Do you see him here for the next 5 years to see the project out?
First of all, if he lasts the whole season, he's going to be the first one for a long time to do so. So that would be a start, and I think he will, touch wood.
First since Bruce?
Yes, Steve Bruce did it in the season where, I don't know whether he's mentioned it, but we finished 10th.
Yeah.
He doesn't like to mention it very often.
Yeah. It was his Geordie route. That's what cost him.
Yeah, well, that's what he says. Yeah. It's funny, though, because he managed Sheffield United. He's now taken over at Sheffield Wednesday. He managed Birmingham, and he managed Aston Villa. He's a Newcastle fan. He managed Sunderland.
Yeah.
So he doesn't care about the rivalry. Yeah. Well, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
City manager.
Exactly. Man City. You'll be there. So as for long term, I think he is getting a pretty good reputation. If he takes us up, I know people say hide into nothing because Sunderland should go up. If he goes up straight away, remember what he did at St Mirren was amazing. If he takes us up under what has been difficult financial circumstances with the amount of money that's been, the wage bill's so high, basically, and players that he's not that fussed about on these big wages, that's impressive. And then if we're halfway through the championship, let's say we do go up, and I hope we do, let's say we're halfway through the championship and we are top half of the table, I think we might be in danger of losing him, not because we want him to go, because someone else might take him. So I don't think he'll be here for 5 years, not because he's not good enough, but because someone else will feel he's too good.
Yeah. What do you think will happen if they don't go up?
I think, well, we just have to go up next season.
Yeah.
We have to. We've got one more season of parachute payments. But I suppose we will further cut the wage bill, I guess. I think if we don't go up, it'll still be Jack Ross as long as we only just miss out. I can't see that changing. Every manager says they need three transfer windows. That would then be next summer his third transfer window. And it might be absolutely fully his squad. And I think we'd probably have maybe even a better chance of going up because the club would be on far more solid footing. So if we don't go up, I think we will go up next season, again with Jack Ross as manager.
What do you think about the new owners? Obviously, initially, I think there was a bit of, trepidation. It came out of the blue almost that it was Stuart Donald, the City owner. I mean, what do you make of what they've done since they've came in?
No, very, very positive. Very positive about them. I think Stuart Donald comes across very well. You can see the time and effort he's putting into it. He's not just paying someone to run the club for him and then just kind of looking at the figures. He's hands-on. So absolutely delighted with him. Can't really speak highly enough at the moment. It's clear. And he's got a long-term plan. Even if that long-term plan means Juan Sartori taking full charge. I actually think that the best thing to do, if we keep having success and Stuart Donald wants Juan Sartori to take over, in terms of putting the more money in and being in charge, I would be quite happy for that to happen as long as Stuart Donald then just could become a paid chairman so that he can continue to run the club, even if it's someone with more money who's going to be trying to take it to the next level. Because he's doing such a good job at doing it. Could he then just take a salary and continue to do the job? I would hope that would be the case. I wouldn't want him to just disappear, because when Niall Quinn disappeared, I thought that was the beginning of the end. Now, different scenario, Niall Quinn wasn't the finances behind it like Stuart Donald is, but I would hope that he would still stay. But very complimentary about them so far. I don't think they've put a foot wrong.
Okay, and then transfer window, there's a few names out there. Will Grigg is the one that's, I think, hot on everyone's lips. What do you think, make of that signing?
Well, I don't know if it's true. I'm pretty sure Stuart Donald wouldn't have done that. This has all come from a reply to a tweet, hasn't it? Someone asked him.
And he's winked.
About Will Grigg, and he's winked. Now, I don't see why he would wink if it wasn't.
Yeah.
So, I hope it's true because he's a goal scorer. He's different to the strikers that we've got, and he does score goals in League One. In the Championship, I think he could score goals in the Championship as well, but for some reason, when he's in the Championship, he doesn't play as much. He's not a regular.
This is a loan deal.
Right. See, that's what I was wondering.
Yeah.
So I don't see why Wigan would loan him unless they want to sell him.
I don't.
Because he's not a youngster.
Yeah, I suppose it depends, though. I don't know what Wigan's financial situation is, but say Will Grigg's on $8,000 a week. They might need that wage. If Sunderland are willing to pay that full wage, then they might go, right, okay, well, that means we can bring in this player on loan. So for them, it might just be a case of the only take as our loans.
Right.
I mean, would it make sense for Sunderland to bring in Will Grigg permanently when his record in the Championship isn't amazing?
Well, if you look at our other strikers, Charlie Wyke's untested in the Championship. Josh Madger didn't play that much in the Championship.
He's untested, really. Yeah. He's never played this role.
In the Championship. I think Will Grigg, I think he should have been tested in the Championship, but he doesn't seem to play that much. I wouldn't be against it being a permanent deal, because as long as he wasn't costing very much, his price wouldn't go down.
Yeah.
So I think it would make more sense to be permanent, but again, I don't know what his wages are, and I don't know what Wigan are saying. And although I hope it's true, I'm not sure if it is. The thing is, I'm not even that convinced we need a striker if Madger's staying. Now that Wyke's back and there's Watmore, I guess if we did send Sinclair back and Grigg was coming in for Sinclair, I could understand that. But if Sinclair's staying, I actually don't think we necessarily need one.
Is it just a case... I don't know if it's a case of buying an extra weapon, though. I mean, if you want to go up and you can look at your bench and go, right, okay, well, we've got Will Grigg to come on. I mean, he's a far better option than Jerome Sinclair. Last 20 minutes, you're getting beat 1-0, you're drawing 0-0. You know, we've drawn a lot of games this season.
Yeah.
We could have brought on a player like Will Grigg, who's to say that.
Well, that's probably the thinking behind it, and I'm not against it, and I do like Will Grigg. So
She's got a great song as well. So,
well, can you imagine that? We'll be absolutely loving that if he can get his...
That's like Gibril Cissé chant levels.
I love that. And you know, I actually loved Gibril Cissé. I was devastated when we sent him back. Especially when the song was, we'll never send him back to France.
Yeah.
And we did.
Yeah. I did enjoy Gibril Cissé. I mean, I think when we signed him, just to totally take off course, it was like a statement. Like, I couldn't believe that Sunderland had brought in Gibril Cissé. He was such a big name at the time. I don't think he was the right fit, though. If I'm being honest, that second half of the season, he was pathetic. But the first half was brilliant.
I think, I'm not really sure what happened in the second half. I mean, the thing is, we were very poor in the second half. After
I think it was just a bad...
After Ricky's original, initial...
we just got lucky that Newcastle and Hull results. And Borough were so bad.
Yeah.
And I think West Brom finished bottom, didn't they, by a mile? Well,
when Newcastle beat Middlesbrough, they were... It looked like they were pretty much safe. Their next game was at home to Fulham. And I know that Alan Shearer, who was manager at the time, had... once they beat Middlesbrough... had started inquiring about players to sign in the summer. Nigel Riococo, who was highly rated at the time, and Darren Bent. And so he was ready. Like, well, we should be fine now. And then Diamante Camara scored for Fulham at St. James's. Fulham won. And suddenly it was like, they're not safe yet. And then that last day, of course, their own goal sent them down. Us and Hull survived. But it was quite a... What's the term? I don't like to use pathetic, but it was actually quite a pathetic way of staying up. It was just because everyone else
was
losing. Whereas some of our great escapes have been because we have pulled off some ridiculous results.
Yeah, that wasn't a great escape. That was an average escape.
A lucky escape, I would say.
An underwhelming escape.
Yeah.
Some exchange betting companies run short-lived promotions, like month-long offers of low commission. At BetDak, we wanted to change the way we did things, so we set our commission at 2% permanently. That's 2% on football, horse racing, golf, almost any sport. 2%. That's just one way that BetDak is changing for the better. For the better. Like you. BetDak, the 2% commission exchange.
Over 18s only, please gamble responsibly. I think as well, back on the striker front, I think there's three strikers I think they're looking at. I don't think Will Grigg is necessarily the one.
Right. Well, the thing is, I've... because up until recently... See, right now, my contacts at the club are very poor. I don't... I know a couple of people there. There was a time when I knew everything that was going on. I had so many great contacts at the club.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they left... new ones were coming in and I knew everything. And even though it's not my job to cover Sunderland, because I'm not even a reporter anymore. It's my job to break stories, but it can be from anywhere. But at Sunderland, I had such fantastic contacts. I knew everything that was going on. Now I'm actually quite happy to leave it to others and find out, just as the way that everybody else finds out when they read it on Roker Report or Sunderland Echo, whatever, or from Keith Downey. Finding it out that way is quite exciting. Mm-hmm. I quite like it. But when I had the contacts at the club, I knew everything. Things that I couldn't report, things I could report. A lot of the things I couldn't report were unfortunately negative. But I'll give you one example that I can say now. And I don't necessarily blame anyone for this, but we all know that we wanted Virgil van Dijk. Everyone knows that. Did you know that he had signed?
No.
He had signed for us, right? It was Lee Congerton who'd done the deal. He had signed, everything was signed. He was ready to be presented, but the money hadn't been transferred to Celtic. And Congerton got the call from Ellis Short to say, I've changed my mind, I'm not going to release that money. So having signed the deal, he was sent back to Celtic, where he then went and signed for Southampton and then went for £75 million. And it's quite possibly, there's a strong argument to say he's the best centre-back in the world.
It's scary.
So that is scary.
Mind you, we would have ruined Virgil van Dijk.
Well,
would
he still be the same player?
No, he was a classy player at Celtic, though. I remember watching him at Celtic going, why is nobody... I was surprised Sunderland and Southampton were the linked teams at the time. I was like, he's better than that. He's
But then there was the fear of signing a player from Scotland back then, like when Newcastle signed John Alan Boomsong. He was back then the Virgil van Dijk, and that didn't work out, and that was still in people's minds even though it was years earlier. Mm-hmm. Now people have realised that
van Dijk was actually pretty good.
He was fairly decent, but there's actually a few stories similar to that as well where it's just people changing their minds. And I actually was never against Ellis Short. I really wasn't. I felt that his intentions were good. He really wanted Sunderland to get as high up as possible. He did feel that Sunderland should have been at the top end of the Premier League. And I think he just spent his money in the wrong places and ended up spending too much. But I always used to defend him. It didn't work. And I can't defend the fact that I can't say it did work. But his intentions were good, and I liked that. But it was, I mean, there's another one as well where he was, when he persuaded Advocaat to stay, he was desperate for Advocaat to stay. He felt as long as Advocaat was manager, we'd be fine. Just like I felt as long as Allardyce was manager, we'd be fine. He loved Advocaat. He persuaded Advocaat to stay with certain promises, and immediately said he's having none of them. And then Advocaat realised that he wasn't getting what he thought he was getting and was just trying to leave straight away. It was surprising that Advocaat didn't quit earlier. He tried to quit earlier, actually, and he was convinced to stay until an international break. So he definitely made mistakes, but I do still think his intentions were good. Ellis Short, that is.
He's still watching the team, actually.
Good.
Say that he buys every game to watch. So apparently he's going to be here for a game this season.
Well, I did hear that on this podcast. Yeah. I heard Stuart Donald say that he was supposed to be at one and didn't
towards
come.
Towards the end of the season.
But I remember where I was when we found out that the takeover had happened. I was out. I'd been to the Fulham game on the Friday night.
Which takeover was this one? The recent one.
This one.
Also, the Fulham game.
Game where Zorro scored, but then Mitrovic scored. Mm-hmm. I mean, we were already down. I mean,
we got robbed that day, didn't we?
Yeah, well, my dad came all the way down because we thought, because if we'd beaten Burton and we'd beaten Fulham, we could have been on another great escape. So we'd booked the tickets and he'd booked to come down. Him and my mum came down. And so we went to the Fulham game, still enjoyed ourselves and stuff. But Sunday lunch, we're sitting having Sunday lunch in a pub nearby, near me. And then I looked at Twitter to say that Coleman had been sacked. And I was absolutely furious. I left the table and walked outside, because I was absolutely furious. I thought it was a dreadful decision. But then suddenly it flashes up within about 5 or 10 minutes that there's been a takeover and that all the debts had been cleared. And my head was going all day. My head was going, how has this all happened in this short space of time? I didn't know anything. I didn't know who Stuart Donald was. On air, I called him Donald Stewart, which was embarrassing. All right.
That's why Charlie does it.
That we'll come on to that in a sec. So, And I was trying to get my head around it. And then when everything had settled, I thought, right, well, this is positive that someone's bought the club. I still would have preferred Coleman to be manager at the time. And Ellis Short is, although he's been often seen as the villain, that is quite, he actually ended up leaving the club in a decent state out of his own pocket. And I think there's a lot of people who may have really disliked him, who at least can respect that part of it. And I've never met him, by the way.
I don't think anyone did.
I've never met him.
It's like a mystery figure.
When you were saying there about Charlie.
Yeah.
Because I was telling...
That was off air.
Yes, yeah, well, exactly. No, but I don't, it's more of an embarrassing story to me than anything derogatory towards him. Because what we were saying before we came on, because Connor asked me if I've met any of the owners, and I said, well, I have met I have met Charlie Methven at pretty much every away game.
In a pub.
In the pub. But the first time I met him was the Gillingham game away, which was a great away day, by the way. That Gillingham away last season got given the worst away day in the Football League. It's my best this season.
It's good, no roof, temperate sand.
Yeah, I suppose it was summer. And I was in shorts. But I went up to, so anyway, in the pub, I went up to Charlie Methven to introduce myself. Now, if I'm just walking down the street or anywhere, not very many people come up to me and talk to me or like kind of recognize me from my job. Mm-hmm. But if I see anyone involved in football, a player, a manager, coach, whoever, they tend to watch a lot of Sky Sports News. So I will go up to them and they will recognize me. They might not know my name, but they'll recognize the face because I'm on a lot. Mm-hmm. And they'll see that. So I went up to Charlie Methven with the same kind of attitude, like, "Oh, Charlie, how are you doing?" And it was quite clear that Charlie Methven does not watch Sky Sports News, or he doesn't like Sky Sports News, because there was no way he knew who I was, or he was pretending he didn't know who I was. So it was quite embarrassing, because I was with my two friends. One of them, again, a Newcastle fan, came with me all the way to Gillingham, and an Arsenal fan, basically my son's two godfathers. I said, "Right, I'll tell you what, I'll take you on a day on the lash.
Yeah.
We'll watch the football, something completely different for you two." We went out, and they have never, ever stopped laughing at me from the time that I went to speak to Charlie Methven, and he had no idea who I was. So they are loving that. Yeah, I didn't.
Embarrassed.
So I've seen him since a million times, well, every away game since, and in the Colliery Tavern last night, and I just keep distance.
Charlie will know me. You'll definitely know who I am, lads.
I just assumed. Very embarrassing.
Yeah, never assume. Okay, well, we'll jump on to sort of your life, because you've got an interesting job, I would say. I imagine people always say that, do you? You've got an interesting job. How long have you been at Sky? And I asked this, even though I Googled it, but still, people might not know.
Well, Google will actually get it wrong. I've been at Sky since August 2004.
Oh, that's what Google said.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. Well done, Google. Yeah, August 2004, and I became a presenter in August 2011.
So what are you doing in 2004 to 11?
Yeah, so it took me, that's what I always wanted to do. And it took me 7 years, which probably more than I hoped, but it was actually, it meant I did everything in between. So in 2004, I was a runner. Okay, so most places have done away with runners now.
Clarify what a runner is. Yeah, people might be thinking that you're some sort of sprinter here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it did involve a lot of sprinting for some of the guests I was looking after. But as a runner, you're at the very bottom of any organization. If someone tells you, you've got to go and do something, you've got to go and do it.
You make the coffees,
so making teas and coffees was part of it. Doing the auto cue for the presenters, that's okay, that's a more important job. So that was part of it, fair enough. But most of the time, it's spent looking after the guests. So back then, I would be a runner on the Champions League shows. So Richard Keys would be the presenter. He'd always have three guests, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, three different guests. And you'd have to just look after them. And whatever they wanted, you had to find a way of getting it for them. You're also making sure that you printed the scripts out for everybody, so everybody had the scripts. But really, if someone said, go and get these 10 boxes from the other side of Sky, and Sky's a big place, and bring them back, you had to do it. That was your job, to do the jobs that, if anyone needed you to do something, you had to be there to do it. So I did that for 2 years, which was quite demoralizing, given that I just, you know, got a university degree, a first class degree at university, to go and do that as my first job. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I was at the bottom of a ladder that I wanted to be on. I knew that I could climb it and get to where I wanted to be. So I stuck it out for 2 years, then got the job at Sky Sports News. So actually, finally, I was a journalist, which is what I had studied to do. So that was then, when you see the side panels with all the league tables, and that was all updated manually. That was me doing all the fixtures, typing up the breaking news at the bottom. That was me.
Then, make any really bad typos?
No, there have been bad ones when it thankfully wasn't me, when we said that Everton had won the Ashes in 2005. We'd accidentally typed Everton rather than England.
Fair. That was like predictive text.
That was
almost
before. Well, I think it's just, so the guy who did it was so used to writing Everton on his keypad, he's gone Everton rather than England. But it was there for about probably 30 seconds, but it was before the days
of social.
So,
yeah,
completely nowadays. Oh,
we would have destroyed Sky. Everyone would
have. Yeah, you'd get in all sorts of trouble. There was another one, which again wasn't me. It was a girl I know who we used to, on that kind of ticker, we would, if there were any key incidents, we'd update them. So it was, I can't remember who the player was, but someone, she was supposed to write, has a shot from the edge of the area. Well, if I tell you the word shot,
Yeah.
One letter was changed. Yeah. And so someone had that at the edge of the area, which that was just at the start of social media days, as in Twitter days. And that one kind of went around the place. Yeah. But that one's a little... That's funny, funny things. Mine wasn't... I didn't really... And there was a player called Ossie Sankofa at Charlton. He'd signed a new contract and I spelled his first name wrong for about 10 seconds. But a lot of people hadn't heard of him anyway.
Yeah.
He was like a right back stroke centre back. So mine weren't too bad. But then from there to actually writing the script. So then I was actually proper journalism because I was writing the scripts, cutting the picture to go with the script, then to being a reporter, which everyone knows what that is. And I had a 1 year at Sky Sports News Radio, which was only going for about 2.5 years. Had a year up in Leeds doing that, which was absolutely brilliant. And that was the kind of last step to kind of, to go back to back down to London to be a presenter. And it, I was there for 1 year and I was kind of brought back. And so, I've been doing that since August 2011.
So as you're a presenter, do you get news stories or are they given to you?
No, well, we can just turn up to work and present, but you know, we're journalists, we don't want to do that. So most of us will be trying to break stories. Mm-hmm. And when it's with us, we don't really like, we would get a story, phone the news desk, the story would go out, as long as it's always checked by other sources. We don't just get it from one source and go with it.
Sky sources.
Yeah, we check. Well, what we'll do if we get something from a Sky source, and by the way, when it's from a Sky source, it's usually someone in the club. Often it's the owner, chairman, managing director, chief executive, manager. It's very rarely from a player. Often it's an agent. When it's an agent, that takes a lot of checking. We always, out of courtesy, you have to phone the club. Any contact you've got.
So this is what happened the other day with Madger.
Yes. Now, this wasn't me who broke the story. I assume it was Keith. Keith got great contacts in the North East. He's the North East reporter. He's got great contacts everywhere, actually. He's very, very good. And even though every time a Sunderland fan comes up to me, they claim that he's a Newcastle fan, I can assure you he's not.
He's a Hearts
fan.
Yeah, we've had him on here.
He's got, he's equal to Sunderland and Newcastle, I can assure you, which is at the moment Newcastle get more exposure because, unfortunately, we're in League One. He'll have got a phone call. It sounds like from what, I haven't spoken to Keith about it, but it sounds like from what Stuart Donald says, the agent has phoned Keith. Keith has done the check. You phone someone at the club. The best person you can phone at the club would be Stuart Donald at Sunderland. So he's obviously done the right thing, phoned Stuart Donald, who said, this is news to me, checked it out himself and found out it's true. Mm-hmm. Now, Stuart Donald is quite rightly upset that Sky knew before him. All right. If all of this is true, and I haven't checked it because I don't need to. If all of this is true.
Take Stuart at his
word. Yeah. He is absolutely right to be unhappy with the agent, but he certainly won't be unhappy with Sky, because it's not our fault that they phoned us and we've done the right thing. We could have put the story out and the first time Stuart Donald could have seen it was on our breaking news strap at the bottom of the screen. That would have been out of order and he would definitely have a problem with Sky then. But we've checked the story with him, to which he said, news to me, then found out, okay, looks like your story's true. Now I need my right of reply, which is absolutely right. Everything there was done right from Sky's point of view and Sunderland's point of view, just possibly not Madge's agent, if that is all true. I don't know who his agent is, so I haven't felt it would be very easy for me to find out, but I'm not particularly interested in getting involved. Stressful. Breaking stories is very stressful.
It's a lot,
yeah, and even if it's true, you're still often upsetting someone, and it's quite a stressful thing. It's very satisfying when you see your story out on the breaking news and everything's fine, everyone's accepted it's true and it ends up being a big story, it's so satisfying. You feel like that is like top journalism. But it's very stressful because sometimes you get a story and you can't get it confirmed by someone else and you know it's true, but you need more people to verify it. And it can't go out. And the person who's giving you the story is like, well, I'm not going to give you a story again because you haven't even broken it.
Yeah.
And it's quite like, it can really like, it, and it can last, some of these transfers can last for months. And it's quite hard work. So I've got a lot of sympathy for reporters that is Keith Downey, for instance, and other reporters, Darmesh. God, Darmesh in these transfer windows, Darmesh Sheth, absolutely stressed as much as you can be, because that's his job for all this time. And I do not envy them. And that was me for a while. And I'm glad it's not now. Now I can, you know, break stories here and there, but it's not my main job.
Yeah. Well, who decides to put the brig and use yellow ticker? Like, how do you know what story is a yellow ticker? And how do you know which is?
Well, that's the producer's job. So there's five different production teams. So there's always a production team on. And the person in charge of that production team will say, that's worthy of the yellow, they'd say. That's worthy of the yellow breaking news. And, you know, sometimes what we call in sky mega breaking is when you see it just all goes yellow and black, like a big...
That's like Alex Ferguson retires.
Yes, exactly. Well, when Mourinho was sacked, for instance, Mourinho sacked all in yellow. It's like, right, that's worthy of a mega breaking. Basically, if a Premier League manager gets sacked or a Premier League manager gets hired, that is worthy of that.
Mm-hmm.
And in other huge things as well, like England winning the Ashes or Everton winning the Ashes, you know what I mean? That's worthy of it. But the producers decide. And most Premier League transfers are worthy of breaking news, but not the mega breaking. If Man U re-signed Cristiano Ronaldo,
that would
obviously be absolutely mega, even though it's just a transfer news rather than a managerial thing, but that would be worthy of it as well. But yes, it wouldn't be me to decide that. I would just be on air at the time, really.
Why are you a Sunderland fan? Well, we'll go to your core Sunderland support. What is it that made you a Sunderland fan?
Yeah, very easy for me. My mum and dad are both football fans and both Sunderland fans. So I was just
told. Are they from Sunderland?
They're both from County Durham. My dad's side are from Towlaw, which I think is a bit of a mix between Sunderland and Newcastle. My mum's side of the family are from Eshwinning, which is all Sunderland. But my whole family, with the exception of two rogue cousins, who support Newcastle. But they were in the difficult situation where their dad supported Newcastle, mum supported Sunderland, so my dad's sister. So they had to make a decision. So they had to pick one. They picked Newcastle. But the rest of the family, all of which are Sunderland. So when I was younger, I was kind of told, your name's Tom, you support Sunderland. And I didn't realise that, although you never should, I didn't realise that you could change. I never wanted to change, by the way. But my two godfathers, one was my uncle, Sunderland fan. One was like a family friend, Newcastle fan. The first game I ever went to was actually Newcastle Portsmouth, St. James's Park, where this godfather had sneakily tried to turn me into a Newcastle fan. And I remember the game, Newcastle 1-2-1. Mick Quinn scored twice. He had a goal disallowed, still adamant to this day. He remembers the game well, saying he should have had a hat-trick. John Burridge made a mistake to let Portsmouth back in, but it was 2-1. And I remember this godfather like, so I think you might support Newcastle then. And I remember just like, back then, in my head, like, but no, because I support Sunderland. I didn't realise that you could actually swap. In my head, it was just like, no, you support Sunderland, that's it. So then my other godfather took me to a Sunderland game, and then me and my dad went all the time. And it was just always, I was told I'm a Sunderland fan. And my son will be told, he's a Sunderland fan. He's already got a Sunderland shirt. He's only 20 months old. I'm, again, lucky. His mum doesn't like football. So I can decide who he supports, because his mum isn't going to argue. So he's a Sunderland fan, even though he's going to be growing up down there.
So where are you from?
I'm from Alnwick. So North Northumberland is where I'm from, which is very much a Newcastle supporting area. Very few Sunderland fans there. But me and my sister... we're the only ones from the family from Northumberland. Everyone else is County Durham. But my dad moved there when I was, before I was born. So I was born there, always been from there. And that's why. And I think that's it with your family. If your parents support the same club and both like football, you support that team.
Yeah.
The difficulty is if one supports one supports the other. And I suppose the easiest way is if neither like football and you do, then you really do choose who you want, because you've got no pressure from anyone.
That's how you end up with rogue Man City fans up in Sunderland.
Yeah, exactly.
do you like Northumberland? Is that your place?
Yeah, well, that's home. The year I had in Leeds, I love Yorkshire as well and love Durham. They're the three counties I love. I mean, right now I live in Berkshire, very happy in Berkshire, but Yorkshire, Durham and Northumberland I mean, ideally, that's where I would live. I mean, I can't really do it.
See yourself still as a strong northerner?
Oh, very much so. Very much. I'd like my son to grow up in you know, the northeast, preferably. But at this stage, it's...
They didn't open a Sky Sports northeast office.
I would love it. I would love it if they did. I would love it if they did. If I could present from there, I would.
What's your best memory watching Sunderland?
Good one. I tell you what, even though I do not hate Newcastle at all, because the vast majority of my friends are Newcastle fans, so I can't hate them. Love beating them in derbies. Do not hate Newcastle. Don't want them to do badly. I just want Sunderland to do better. So the majority of my good memories are derby wins. I mean, the first game I ever went to, it wasn't a derby. It was New Year's Day 1991. 1-0 win against Southampton. We were in the old First Division, which is now the Premier League. Still went down, but we beat Southampton 1-0. Kevin Ball penalty, like Letizia was playing. We had Tony Norman in goal. He made a good save from Letizia at the end. So that's kind of that's the first game, Sunderland game I went to. But all of my top memories since then have been Newcastle wins. The 3-0 under Di Canio was euphoria. I did not see it coming.
Were you there?
I remember, I was there, yeah, yeah. Yeah, all my best memories are games where I've been there. I'm always at St James's Park. I'm always in the Newcastle end because I've got nowhere near enough points to go at the Sunderland end. So I always just go in the Newcastle end because I can get tickets in there easily, because I know so many people who are season ticket holders who aren't that bothered about going. So I was there very close to where Di Canio did his knee slide. And I remember going 1-0 up at half time. I'm thinking, God, we're winning this. And then Adam Johnson scored to make it 2-0.
Oh, and I thought, his name. Oh.
Yes.
Normally you don't say his name. Yes, yes. He's like Voldemort.
I apologise. The second
no,
goal,
it's fine.
The second goal went in. And I thought, God, we've actually got a chance here. Because at 1-0, I still thought, they're gonna do it.
They did actually score as well. They scored a good goal.
And it was onside.
Yeah.
But Pardew's reaction was absolutely brilliant, though.
Golden.
That was material. And then I remember turning around to my friend who I'd brought up. He'd never been to a derby. He's, you know, one of my son's godfathers now. I brought him up. And when Sessegnon passed the ball to David Vaughan, I said, oh, no. Vaughan will never score in a million years. And he just hit it. I've never seen anyone strike a ball so well. And in the Newcastle end, and I still, like, kind of sat on my hands. I always do, would never give anything away. And my mate, who doesn't even support Sunderland or Newcastle, kind of like jumped up because he was so shocked that he hit it like that when I'd said he'd never scored in a million years. And the night out afterwards was absolutely brilliant. It was a bank holiday the next day. It was just absolutely clever. That's a great memory, that one. The Barini 2-1 under Poyet, very similar. That was at the Stadium of Light. We were due to just go back down to Alnwick that after the game, and Mickey Gray kindly invited us into the players' lounge. So we went to the players' lounge for a few, and then we went in. Mickey just basically took us around Sunderland, and what a night, because first win of the season, it was against Newcastle, it was a screamer, late winner, and suddenly there was hope that season, which ended up being a brilliant season. So that's a great memory as well. So they're the two that really stick out, but the League Cup final as well sticks out, even though we lost.
What about the semi?
The semi I couldn't go to. The semi I was working until 7. I had to race home just to watch it on TV. That one would have been... I'd say that probably would have trumped them all, but I couldn't go.
Fair. Favourite player?
Ever.
Ever.
Kevin
Sunderland
Ball.
Player. Yeah.
Kevin Ball. Yeah. Easy. Because thing is, with me... I was never that good at football, but got a little bit of pace. I can pass the ball. I can control the ball. But never in my 35 years have I attempted to even challenge for a header. I don't think I've ever made a tackle, right? So the people that I love are the people who can do everything that I can't do, the hard men. So I love John Kay. You're a bit younger than me, so you might not remember much about John Kay. he was possibly even harder than Kevin Ball. I was at Sunderland Birmingham, pretty sure it was Birmingham, at Roker Park. Lee Howie actually scored a screamer. We won, but John Kay broke his leg. Broke his leg. He was put on a stretcher and pretended to row. You must have heard that story. He was trying to pretend he was rowing a canoe on a stretcher when he'd broken his leg. Most people would need the gas and air.
Yeah.
That's how hard he was. So I loved him. But Kevin Ball has obviously been there for longer and barely left the club. And I still never met him. And I'm devastated that I never met him. Still never met him. I love him. Just absolutely loved him because he was so hard and I couldn't do that. That's why I've always loved Cattermole. And the amount of times I've had to defend Cattermole is because of just blind love for him. I've always loved him. Same reason, because he's hard and I'm not. I loved Gary Bennett at first as well. I mean, that whole 92 Cup final team were all kind of heroes in my eyes. I mean, John Byrne as well. So that was 92. I was born in 1983. So I was nine just that summer. I would have turned 10.
Yeah, so because I was Phillips, and that was when I was about 6 or 7.
Right. Okay, fine.
So yeah, that's the team, though, you remember, isn't it? That's where you think of.
Exactly.
The heroes, the great, larger than life figures.
Yeah, because we went, I mean, the first season that I got into football after Italia 90, we got relegated. And it took us a long time to come back up under Peter Reid. So that cup final team were real heroes to me, just like the England 1990 squad were heroes to me, because that's what got me into football. So they're all heroes and stuff, but Kevin Ball's still the favourite ever Sunderland player. But of the Sunderland players that I've met, I've never been disappointed. Niall Quinn is... Have you met Quinn?
Nope.
He is even nicer than he seems. Absolutely lovely. And he'd do anything for you. Lovely, lovely man. Kevin Phillips, get on great with Kevin Phillips. Absolutely class. Mickey Gray, laugh a minute. Really, really, a very good pundit as well. I'm surprised he hasn't been on this, actually.
He's on. He was meant to be on Monday.
Oh.
But then for whatever reason, we were going to have him and Donald on the same day.
Right.
One before the other, but Mickey's just rearranged it for later this month.
Right, fine. Oh, well, you'll love speaking to him. He's got some great stories
as well. I've seen him at Talkins and stuff.
Right.
Before,
so. He won't mind telling the stories either. Yeah. He's a top man, Mickey Gray. Danny Higginbotham is a good friend of mine, lovely man, very good pundit.
Rory Delap. Here,
I know, well, I thought it was a very strange decision to let go of Higginbotham. Delap, I could have understood. He wasn't really playing and wasn't doing very much. But Delap is a really, really, like, he's one of the nicest men I've ever met.
Has he got, like, you know, really big biceps?
He's got big shoulders. He's got very, very big shoulders. I wouldn't say he's got big biceps.
I always wonder with him, like, that, yeah, if he'd had that throw-in, like, we could have maybe stayed up.
What, when we had 15 points?
Yeah, if I had him throwing them in the box, we couldn't score goals, could we? So.
Well, John Stead couldn't head the ball even though he's tall. Anthony Letalek, I don't think, ever won a header. Andy Gray was decent in the air, I suppose, but not much good at anything else. And the fourth striker was Stephen Elliott, who I liked, and he never actually got a game that season. But I've also had, even though Kevin Ball's my favourite, I've never had him on the back of a shirt. I've had some really strange choices in terms of names on the back of a shirt. I've had Stephen Caldwell.
Nice.
On the back of a shirt.
Nice. The 4-5 one.
Diodora. Diodora with the collar.
Yeah.
Yes, Diodora with the collar. That was a strange choice. I still don't know why. I had Don Goodman on the back of the kind of very deep green Vaux. I think it might have been Vaux Sampson at the time. Now, that was fair enough. He was key man at the time. Matty Piper. Loved him. I've still got that Baltic blue away shirt.
Yeah.
With Piper number 7 on the back. Because he was so fast and tricky, a little bit like how I like the hard men, because I can't be one. The way he was able to skin players, I couldn't do that either. So I really liked Matty Piper. And under Peter Reid, we didn't ever really go for pace. And when he signed him, I was so happy. So I had him on the back of a shirt. And that's just a real shame. I loved that podcast with him. That was one of my favourites, actually.
He's a good guy.
Really interesting, his whole life, actually. So I've had him on the back of a shirt. I've had Danny Diccio.
Nice.
Had him on the air, like an away. It was blue, but with a red, one red stripe and one white stripe. Kind of a hoop in the middle.
2000.
With the Lamptons. Yeah.
Oh, so it'll be the 1999 one.
I've had Diccio on the back of that because I thought he was underrated.
I like Diccio. Yeah, scored some good goals in.
Yeah, see, I liked him. And I think it gave a bit of balance that he was left-footed. But obviously, I've had the obvious ones, Arca, Phillips. But I've never had Quinn, never had Ball. And they're probably the two biggest legends.
Do you like the most?
Yeah.
What's your funniest story working on live TV? Doesn't even have to involve you, but must have been some things. I mean, you must have made some humorous mistakes.
Yes, there was one where I got completely done. The whole of Sky got completely done by a false story. And it actually involved Newcastle. I remember Newcastle went on this spree of signing players from France.
Yeah, that was under Graham Carr.
Yes, who at the time was doing an incredible job. Just everyone else kind of then picked up on it and he didn't really evolve. But Jimmy Kebbe was at Reading at the time, fairly poor player.
Winger.
Right winger. Yeah. I think he might have been a Mali international, but he was from French. He considered himself as being French. So he tweeted from his official Twitter account, "On my way up to Newcastle for a medical." Now, so we see it from his official Twitter. So we're like, okay, well, we can break this, that Jimmy Kebbe is saying this. So I'm on air, getting my ear, okay, Jimmy Kebbe says he's on his way to Newcastle for a medical. Now, knowing a lot of Newcastle fans, I was very surprised at this story anyway. But anyway, so it comes to me. And even though it's from his official Twitter, there was still a phone call going in from the news desk to Reading to say, is this true? Which we probably should have done before it got to me. So I'm live on air and I say, right, more breaking transfer news again. It's from Newcastle and that Jimmy Kebbe is up for a medical. And as I'm saying that in my ear, no, Tom, no, we're phone Reading. He's messing around. It's not true. And like mid-sentence, I'd go, right, we've just been on the phone to Reading. Turns out that it's just a joke and he's messing around. Then we moved on. But I look like a right dipstick.
Yeah.
Because it was just... The thing is, though, given that he played for Mali, I didn't know that he had... It's kind of a really rubbish joke for him to tell, but it worked and completely...
Yeah, he mugged you off.
Completely did me.
Yeah.
Completely did me. There's probably a few more, but I probably should have had them in my mind before coming in.
Yeah.
But there's been a few times where I've looked like a bit
That's
of a
That's the nature
fool.
Of live TV.
Well,
is it
exactly.
Fully live?
Yeah.
100% live.
Midnight to 6 a.m. isn't.
Yeah, recording, 1 hour
yes,
recording.
But unless there's late breaking news, then we stay on. But in general, it's 6 a.m. till midnight is 100% live, always.
So how many hours do you do?
So on air, some shifts are 3 hours, some are six. So it's some three, some four, some five, some six. And you tend to get in, a few hours before to make sure that you're well prepped.
Makeup.
But in thing, yeah, makeup as well, yeah. Get your suit on. But it is really a 24-hour job. Your phone can't ever be off because there could be a story. Someone could ring you with a story or ring you to ask you to chase a story. So it's 24 hours, really. But on air, you're never on more than 6 hours. But 6 hours is a slog. Constant talking for 6 hours is a slog. But the busier it is, the quicker it goes.
Yeah.
I mean, I was on just before Christmas, Jose Mourinho got sacked. I was going on air 10 till 1 on my own. And I was looking at the rundown, speaking to the producer, and it was like a really quiet day. We're like, oh, it's like we could really do with a big story. I was like, wasn't really that up for it because I knew that there was nothing to really test me.
Mm-hmm.
At 10 to 10, Mourinho got sacked. So suddenly the rundown's out the window. It's just get as much reaction as possible, get someone on. And it was... The best, I mean, it was 3 hours that I loved being on for, even though I was on my own, because it was like, right, we've now got Gary Neville on the phone, right, don't give me any questions, I'll just leave it to me, done. Right, we've now got Jamie Carragher, we've now got Graham Souness, right, we've now got Danny Higginbotham, bang, after the other, interviews for as long as I wanted them to be.
Yeah.
Brilliant, but it's very rare, it's got to be a massive story for that to happen. So I loved it. The bigger the story, the better. And it's amazing how 3 hours can feel like a long time on a quiet day and how they can feel like 3 minutes on a day like that.
what advice would you give to somebody trying to get into the media? We have a lot of people listening to this, so you know, if want to get involved at some point, well, what would you tell somebody who's, you know, maybe thinking about what to do in the future? How would you become a Sky Sports news presenter?
Yeah, well, what you have to do is decide what it is that you want to do, right? Decide what it is and completely go for that. Find the bottom of the ladder somewhere, wherever you want to do. You might want to be a newspaper journalist. You might want to be radio. You might want to be Sky Sports News. You can find a way in. You can do work experience that isn't even official work experience. You can build your CV up on your own by, so you can write social media reports. You can go to a non-league club and say, can I do your social media for you? It's free. I'll do it for free. I'll write match reports for you. You can start that way. You basically just need to get started, right? But once you get started, just give it everything you've got, right? Don't whinge, don't moan. It will take time, but as long as you keep on working hard and ask people for advice. Don't ask them for a job, ask them for advice. People like to be asked for advice, right? Take their advice. You listen to people, but mainly you just work hard and show patience, because it will take time and you will at least get your chance. Now, if you get your chance and you don't take it, you know, you can only ask for a chance. And I'm absolutely certain that as long as you've worked hard, showed patience, listened to the right people who you've asked advice for, and then you get your chance, I'm absolutely 100% sure whoever it is will take their chance. And that is it. You've got to show that patience, though.
In what ways do you think sports media needs to change?
It's changed a lot since kind of verified accounts came in on Twitter. Because we're now getting stories that we would have had to dig very hard for straight from the horse's mouth. And so it's changed a lot in that way.
It's easy to contact people, because we find it, Rogue Report, we can contact a massive amount of people just through Twitter.
Yeah.
Because if anybody's got Twitter and either follows us, or you can message, you know, tweet them saying, you know, come ask me something. They get back to you.
Yeah, exactly. And my problem with Twitter, I mean, I've only been on Twitter for 18 months. I was always dead against it. And then I decided to join because the show I do on a Saturday, Goals Express, is very much, there's a lot of social media interaction. It didn't make sense for me not to be on it myself. Mm-hmm. So that's actually the only reason I joined. That's my excuse for having so few followers compared to all of my colleagues.
How many I've
got about 7,000, but my colleagues, some have got in the hundreds of thousands. And some, pretty much everyone other than me, have got tens of thousands, all right? My excuse is that I've only been on for 18 months or so, but actually it's just that I'm pretty boring, as people are probably finding out listening to this. So with that, the thing I don't like about Twitter is it's very, very negative. Most people will say something negative to anything, and I really don't like that.
Yeah.
But that's not something really the media can change. I think that what needs to change in the media is from the, especially in a football point of view, I think that people involved in football clubs should be more open, because they are probably the vast majority very good people who have some very good points. But if you go and interview a Premier League player, sat next to them is a press officer who is probably advising them just give nothing away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the press officer's fault. That's the way that it's been for a long, long time. And you can interview someone and they can come across as so boring because they're kind of told to be like that. And then they stop playing, get into the media, and they're absolutely excellent. Got great views on football, very strong, opinionated, and funny. Chris Boyd, when he was playing, I mean, he still is playing. He's playing very well. But when he was like playing for Scotland and Rangers and Middlesbrough, I thought, God, I don't know why we bother interviewing him, because he's so boring. What's the point? Now that he's older and kind of does what he likes and is involved with Sky, that guy is absolutely class. But when he was a young player, he was never allowed to show that.
Mm-hmm.
And now you look at how well Stuart Donald's coming across and Charlie Methven. And the Sunderland social media account, getting, you know, having a laugh with Luke O'Neill.
Yeah.
Max Power, everybody really, Lyndon Gooch. Everyone comes across so well because they're allowed to come across mm-hmm. well. And I don't know where the fear is. There seems to be a fear that every journalist is trying to trip you up, trying to get a negative story. When actually that is just, I can tell you now, that is 100% not the case. If it's a negative story, we will report it because it's a story regardless. But if you have an interview with someone who comes across really well, it comes across well to everyone. And that's what I would like to change. I would like the clubs to be more open. If you go into a sport that doesn't have quite the same following as like Premier League football, you are welcomed in, access all areas. Everyone's available for interview. Everybody wants to be interviewed. They bend over backwards for you and everyone comes across so well. And it means we go back. They get more exposure. So I'd like that to change. I'd like people to be a little bit more open because it will end up looking good on them, just like it is this season with Sunderland.
Good stuff. Okay, I think that's probably just about it for us. So thanks for coming in, Tom. We've done an hour and nearly 20 minutes.
My
so.
Pleasure.
Yeah, and are you heading back home today?
Yes, flying back tonight. I'm on air tomorrow. I will be on air for the Checker Trade Trophy draw.
Oh, it's 7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. I'm on air 5 till 8, so...
And who are you doing that with?
I don't know yet.
I think it's EFL because Matters,
isn't it? Because I've been off for a few years... A few days, crikey. Because I've been off for a few days because I went to the Charlton game as well, so I just booked it all off. Mm-hmm. I haven't actually looked into it, but I should probably give them a ring and see, do a bit of prep.
Yeah. What do you see yourself? What do you want to do on Sky Sports in the future? What would be your ideal role going forward?
Well, this is the job that I've always wanted, right? So I'm certainly, if I'm here forever, no complaints.
If yeah, Ian Update Jones, was, fellow Sunderland fan.
Yeah, well,
his Monday Night Football
he is, let's be honest, better than me, far more professional than me as well. He wouldn't book a day off work to go to Charlton away like I do and Portsmouth away, all of those away games where I take a day off work. That's probably why Dave Jones does Super Sunday and I do Goals Express for that reason. But I actually would probably, that is one of the flagship shows, Monday Night Football and Super Sunday. That's flagship. And you've got Soccer Saturday, flagship. And you've got two excellent presenters doing it, Dave Jones and Jeff Stelling.
Jeff might retire soon.
They are.
His spot.
Thing is, though, when Dave took over from Ed Chamberlain, absolutely excellent. Dave, just as good, possibly even better. And Ed hadn't been doing it for that long. So it wasn't like taking over from Sir Alex Ferguson. You take over from Jeff Stelling and you're basically the David Moyes.
You need to be the one after that, don't you?
Exactly. So I'm not really eyeing that up. I think Soccer Saturday is brilliant and I would love to do it. But taking over from Jeff would be very, very difficult.
I was always surprised when Ed Chamberlain left Sky. I was like, you've got the best job in the world, mate.
Well,
he's went to racing, hasn't
yeah,
he?
Well, he had two dream jobs. One of his dream jobs was Super Sunday, which he did. And one of them was like live horse racing, which he's now doing. So he had a chance to do, he probably would have liked more, I guess, would have liked more time at Sky before going to the racing. Or ideally, I suppose he would have liked to have done both if possible. But if he gets that opportunity to do his two dream jobs, then you're gonna take it. And he's excellent at that as well. My dad's a big horse fan of horses. Yeah, well he breeds horses. Uh-huh. So
makes sense. Northumberland.
Yeah, and he says that Ed's very good at that as well. So
no, doing well.
No harm done.
Yes, we'll sign off. We've got podcast on Sunday, I imagine. Don't know if I've organised anything for it. It's Christmas just came back, so see who comes on.
Well, hopefully, I'll tell you what, let's just hope we're talking about a win.
Yeah, big game. And Luton's obviously lost their manager as well. I haven't even touched on that.
Have they definitely?
I saw some...
I had heard, well,
Pete
my...
Pete Graves, it's Sky, former Sky guy. Oh, is it?
Was he still Pete Sky? Graves is Sky, yeah.
No, O'Rourke. What's his name?
Oh, Pete O'Rourke.
Yeah, him.
Oh, he's good. He knows his stuff.
He said before that it's pretty much a
Well, that's
deal.
Interesting because Liam Lawrence tweeted it, yeah. Our former player, and I get on great with Liam. And he's banging there with Stoke and he said it last night, so could be true.
Be interesting.
I would see that as positive news for us.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. Unless they play for him when he's not there.
I'll be at work on Saturday. My dad will be going, but I'll be at work, unfortunately.
Well, yeah, it's just like a Saturday he'll be on. What are you doing on it? Or you'll be working after?
I go on at 6.
Do you get to watch all the matches, though?
So I get in at 2 o'clock, get myself set up. Every Premier League and Championship game are right in front of me. Watch them, then go on air for 3 hours afterwards. Really good, busy 3 hours. But that time at 3 o'clock, every now and again there's a League One game. So this is the first season since I've worked at Sky that I haven't been able to watch Sunderland every single week, which is probably why I'm going to more games, one of the reasons. But people, you see, me and a guy called Julian Waters, we do that shift every Saturday, 6 till 9. So we're watching all those games from 3 o'clock, and every week we say, how much do you think people would pay to be where we are now? And we're getting paid.
Yeah.
So Saturdays, although people don't like working Saturdays,
the best job.
Favourite day of the week.
Okay, we'll sign off. That's a good note to sign off from.
If there's one thing that my family and friends know me for, it's being an amazing gift giver. I owe it all to Celebrations Passport from 1-800-Flowers.com, my one-stop shopping site that has amazing gifts for every occasion. With Celebrations Passport, I get free shipping on thousands of amazing gifts. And the more gifts I give, the more perks and rewards I earn. To learn more and take your gift giving to the next level, visit 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST. That's 1-800-Flowers.com/ACAST.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.